AM 1290 and 95.7 FM. News Talk Radio WHIO and Sim Trainer Indoor Range and Firearms Training Center present Shooting from the Hip. Straight talk about firearms, ammunition, self-defense, when and where you can carry, legislation, and legal issues. All about safety, training, and so much more. Your hosts are Jeff Pedro and Mark Avery. Jeff is a 24-year veteran police officer, currently assigned City of Kettering Detective, and owner and lead instructor at Sim Trainer. Mark is a retired Air Force officer, senior staff instructor at Sim Trainer, and NRA-certified instructor in multiple disciplines. They're here to bring to the microphone the truth about guns. Join them by calling 457-1290. Now, Shooting from the Hip. On AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM. News Talk Radio, WHIO.
I want to welcome our listeners to this broadcast of Shooting from the Hip, brought to you by Sim Trainer, the Dayton area's first indoor range and firearms training center, located at 2031 Dryden Road in Moraine, right across from DP&L. You can reach us by calling us at 293-3914, or you can visit us on the web at www.sim-trainer.com. And I also want to encourage our listeners, if you have any questions, concerns, issues that you've heard about over the past week or so relative to firearms-related issues, give us a call at 457-1290. That's 457-1290, and we'll get you on the air. We'll be glad to field your questions. I want to start off today's show by talking about a topic we've discussed before, but it keeps coming up, and that's gun selection. And that was prompted by a conversation. I just happened to walk into the range the other day bringing inventory into the store, and one of my staff workers was engaged in a conversation with a customer about the proper concealed carry gun for his daughter. And as soon as I walked in, he turned to me and he goes, "Oh, there he is now. And that's just the guy I'm looking for," which automatically puts my radar up. And I know that something's about to come. So that happens quite often. And it kind of clues me in to pay attention, because you never know what to expect after. But he immediately said, "Hey, what do you think about my daughter carrying the Ruger LCP?" And I said, "Well, tell me a little bit about your daughter." And he goes, "Well, you know, she's been shooting for a while, and she's pretty experienced, and she's pretty good. And she saw this gun, and she held it in her hand, and she likes it." And I said, "Well, you still haven't told me a whole lot about your daughter, specifically about her shooting experience." "Well, she shoots, and she's familiar." I said, "Well, tell me how much she shoots." He goes, "Well, she's been to the range with me a couple times over the past year." And so that immediately told me she's probably not that experienced. Matter of fact, she's not that experienced. And I asked him then about what types of guns she shot. And he said, "Well, she shoots the guns I have." And I said, "Well, what do you have?" And he mentioned a full-size Taurus and a couple of other different full-size weapons. And I said, "Well, the first thing I'm going to tell you is I think we need to spend a little bit of time with her in either basic class or in private lessons, trying to get her to try a variety of different guns, and then we'll make a determination and help her make a better determination of what gun's right for her." And right away, I had to say that for those of you that have shot the LCP, you'll know that that's probably not a gun you want to put somebody in right away. And I liken it to people who say that they're going to go ahead and they're going to start with a 44 Magnum. Well, it's not quite that extreme, but it's a shock when you shoot it, because it's so small and the report is such and the recoil is such that there are some issues. And if you're an inexperienced shooter, it's not a gun you're going to want to go back to. Mark, I'm sure you've had that experience, or you've...
Oh, absolutely. It's a nice little gun. It is as concealable as any gun you can imagine. So that's one of the reasons why it has drawn such tremendous popularity and a lot of interesting press. And a whole lot of people have bought them, and it's almost impossible to buy 380 ammo anymore, at least right now, because partly, I think, because of that gun, because it has increased the demand for the ammunition for it for so much. But it is a handful, and the gun does have a pretty good recoil because it is so light. You've got the Newton's laws of physics going on there. So you have a bullet that's throwing out a very light gun. And so most of that recoil you have to absorb in your hand, instead of having some of that recoil slowed down by the gun. So it's a very sharp slap as opposed to a push with some of the larger guns. And people that have shot that gun who are experienced recognize that, you know, it has a place. It's a very useful tool for self-defense, but it's not a gun that you're going to want to shoot a lot.
Right.
It's just not that comfortable.
Yeah, and the conversation then continued to the point where I got him to understand that it's going to come down to her coming into the range, practicing with a variety of guns, looking at all the relevant issues, how she's going to carry it. And we actually got into that topic, and he said, in her purse. And I said, had she given much thought as to how she's going to carry it in her purse? He goes, well, it's so small, it doesn't really matter. And I said, it does matter.
Yeah, it does.
And so a variety of issues that you've heard us talk about here came up in just that short conversation that ended up actually going about 45 minutes. And it was a very productive conversation, and it was enlightening for me that one of the things that we promote at Sim Trainer is that we can get you to the point, not only where you'll be proficient in the use of a firearm, but we can help you narrow your selection down to a gun that you're going to be happy with, that's going to be right for you, and that's going to do what you want it to do, whether it's just shoot recreationally or ultimately protect you in a self-defense situation. And even though it took that time, we're glad to take that time. And that's kind of one of the things we do down there, is we want to take the time above and beyond just trying to make a sale, because quite frankly, in many of the gun sales, we refer to people like Vandalia Tactical, who's the sponsor of our show. So it's not like we have any vested interest in the type of gun they buy. We certainly sell a few guns over the course of the year, but the majority of our gun sales are diverted to some of the other distributors in the area.
And we have a limited supply of the guns in our safe that we can check out to people to try them out. We do that sometimes during lessons, or if somebody's a member of the range and they want to rent a gun, we have those available. And we do have a Ruger LCP, the little semi-auto. We also have the LCR, the light compact revolver. So people get a chance to try those out and see what works for them before they buy it. Now, we don't have a broad selection of all kinds of different guns. We do have several different types. We have semi-autos and revolvers and so forth. So people can try some things, find out what fits them, find out what they like before they go to commit the money to actually buy a gun. And that's really the best way to do it.
Yeah, we had another individual just last week in an unrelated incident where he came in and he was interested in the XDM, the Springfield XDM, in the compact version. And I happened to have one in the safe. I brought it out. He took it out in the range, shot 10 shots, came out, and we just happened to have several of those in stock. He was ready to cash and carry, so we had him fill out the paperwork, and he took the gun. He was a happy camper. Now, he was an experienced shooter. He knew exactly what he wanted. Matter of fact, he'd been carrying the full-size XD for some time, and he just said that he heard some of the good things about the compact XDM, and he ended up making that purchase, and it was a good thing. So I want to encourage our listeners out there to, if you're getting in the situation where you're getting ready to make a purchase, you're thinking about making a purchase, you're thinking about training, give us some time, and come down and talk with us. Send us an email. We'll be glad to discuss that with you and help you get into something that you're real happy with.
Jeff, let's go out to the phones, and we'll talk to Josh, who has a question for us. Josh, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm going to be selling a gun today to a buddy of mine, and I need to know the legally right way to do it. I bought it from a gun shop, and I knew I had to fill paperwork out for it and everything, so I was just not sure what I needed to do.
Okay, I'm going to assume that you are not a licensed firearms dealer. Is that correct?
Right. I just a personal protection permit.
Okay, and does your friend live in the same state you do?
Yes.
Okay, then basically there's nothing that you have to do. I mean, you know your friend, and so you know his background well enough to know that he's not a felon and would otherwise be someone who is eligible to purchase a firearm. The paperwork that you had to fill out when you purchased that gun from a dealer is because it was a dealer that you purchased from, not because you were buying a gun. So the dealer has a certain requirement for doing a background check, for keeping records for 20 years, and for maintaining a log of all the firearms that they take in through the business and sell out to individuals or to transfer to another business as far as that goes. So they have certain requirements that are levied on them as a part of their federal firearms license, but you as a private owner do not have those requirements. So for you, just to be a responsible gun owner, you need to know who it is that you're selling it to, and obviously if this is a friend, you do. And just to make certain that the people that you're selling it to are people who are eligible to own a firearm and would be able to pass a background check on their own.
Okay. Thank you.
We recommend that you go ahead, Jeff.
Let me just add a couple of things there. Josh, you sound like a young man, and there's an age limit for handguns. It's going to be, you have to be at least 21 years of age, and that's something that I don't think anybody intentionally overlooks, but it's a very important issue that needs to be addressed. For a handgun, it's 21, and for a long gun, it's 18. And also, the other thing I encourage people to do is get a name, address of the person you're selling the gun to, and just keep a record of that so that if anything down the road comes up and your question about it, you can at least say where you passed that gun on to.
Josh, thanks very much for calling the show. We're going to take our first break of the hour. And if you'd like to get on the show, give us a call at 457-1290. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro. You're listening to Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Welcome, listeners, back to this broadcast of Shooting from the Hip. Again, if you want to get on the air today, give us a call at 457-1290. That's 457-1290 with any of your firearms-related questions, concerns, or issues that you'd like to discuss. I want to take just a minute to remind our listeners about a product that's on the market that's had a considerable amount of success, and that's Crossbreed Holsters Super Tuck Inside the Waistband Holster. It's a custom-made holster made specifically for the specific gun that you are interested in carrying. It also comes with a 2-week tryout period and a lifetime warranty, and we're proud to mention that we're one of the first and only dealers in the area down at Sim Trainer. Our first shipment came in about a week ago. They're almost gone, and we just sent the second order out. And they have to be custom ordered, and it takes anywhere from 4 to 6 weeks to get the item because they do, in fact, custom make them to your specifications. And this past week I was at a 2 weeks I'm in a SWAT training or a drug investigators training school, and several of the people asked about that holster. I brought one out as a demo and ended up selling two the next day, and several other people have inquired because it pretty much fits the need of a comfortable inside the waistband holster, especially for bigger people. I know Mark and I have had this debate and discussion on, and early on, because of my experience, I was adamantly against inside the waistband holsters. And since this product came out and it addressed many of the issues I was concerned about perspiration on the gun, spreading the weight of the gun over a broader area and making it easier to conceal and stay inside the waistband, they've solved a lot of those problems. I'm a believer now, and it's a very good product.
It doesn't happen very often, but I won that one.
Yeah, you did. You did. And again, that was simply by me sitting back and being open-minded and seeing that, like I do so often, I'm pretty critical of products that hit the market because I feel that if we're going to recommend something, we have to believe in it.
Yeah, absolutely true.
And Mark and I have had some discussion about that. He personally carries something very similar to that, and he's satisfied with it. And it's something that I'm going to give serious thought to here very soon because it will suit certain needs when you have an issue where you have concealment concerns and you want something a little bit more concealable.
It does require that you add about 2 inches to your waistband. So in order to have room for it, if your pants are already just barely, you know, you're barely able to get the button snapped at the front, you're going to have to get some larger pants. And that's just, you know, one of the things that goes along with it, one of the adjustments to your wardrobe that you have to make in order to be able to conceal a firearm well. So it's worth doing, and it is, like Jeff says, it's very comfortable to be able to carry one inside.
And if you're concerned about having to go to a bigger pant size, you can use that as an excuse to tell your friends.
That's exactly right. You know, that way.
It's not a big deal.
No, it's not, of course. Let's go back out to the phones, and we'll talk to Rob in Huber Heights. Rob, welcome to the show.
Thanks. How you doing?
We're doing great, and we're glad to have you. What's your question?
I am a concealed carry holder, and I was wondering about the law about it has to be in the holster, because I carry a Glock that I put a belt clip on it. I was wondering if that's legal.
If you're in your vehicle, it currently still has to be in a holster. That's one of the ways you can carry it. Just tucked inside your pants with a belt clip does not yet qualify. There is a bill currently pending in the Senate, and if it gets through the Senate and is also approved in the House and then signed at some point in the future, you'll be able to carry the gun legally in whatever way that you choose. But right now, there's 4 ways. You can carry it in a holster on your person. You can carry it in a glove box or a console that closes. You can carry it in a case that closes with a zipper, snap, or buckle, something of that nature. Or you can carry it in a locked case, and that locked case does not have to be in plain sight where the other options, the holster doesn't have to be in plain sight, but a case that is closed and has a zipper, snap, or buckle does have to be in plain sight. Those are right now the only 4 ways you can do it.
Okay. Great, thank you.
It's important to point out there, Rob, that if you get in the vehicle, as long as you have one of those means of carrying it in the vehicle, you're going to be good. You just have to take it out of your belt, and or off your hip and put it in one of those boxes or cases or consoles, whatever the case might be. And then once you get out of the vehicle or as you're getting out, you can put it back in your belt and then go about your business. And that's another reason this bill is going to be so good, because it's going to clean up some of the stupid language about how to carry when it really doesn't matter. There's a lot of good products on the market, and there's an example where you get a good belt clip and it's comfortable for you, it works for you. You're limited because as soon as you get in the car, you got to change the way you're carrying, and it's kind of ridiculous.
Changing the law as is currently proposed would actually improve safety, because it's when you're handling a firearm that something like that could happen. You know, there could be something go wrong. You know, the less you can handle it, the more you keep it in a secure location, wherever it is you carry, the less likely there is to be some sort of an accidental or negligent discharge. And I think that if this law does make it through the Senate and through the House, that'll be a good thing. We just need to have people encourage their state senators initially to support this bill. It's currently in committee, and it's had a couple of hearings in committee. It's still got some work to do there before it gets reported out of committee, and then it will go to the Senate floor for final discussion and hopefully passage, and then it'll go over to the House. And we just need to make sure that all of our representatives understand what we think about this bill and that it's a good idea.
Definitely.
Rob, thanks very much for giving the show a call. We appreciate it. Let's go out to Pat in Kettering, who has a question. Pat, welcome to the show.
Thank you. You gentlemen are very interesting to listen to.
Well, thank you very much.
I have absolutely no knowledge about guns. My husband had brought back a German Luger, and he has passed away. I would like to sell it. I don't know how to go about this. I did have a friend that took it a couple years ago up to a gun, not a show, but one of the stores somewhere. And I guess that he came back and said, you need to handle this individually, because at that time what they wanted to give for it, which was a significant amount, he said I could do much better if I went to a gun show. But I don't know what to do, so I was calling for your expertise.
Well, Pat, I want you to not be in a hurry, okay? Don't be in a hurry to get rid of it, because one of the things I want you to do is get a hold of somebody at the Ohio Gun Collectors Association. And in a minute, Mark will be able to call up the website and give you the website. But I want you to get a hold of them some way via email, or if they give you a phone number that you're going to be able to contact someone. And I want you to talk to them about that, and then I want them to give you some direction. And what they may recommend you do on a pretty regular basis, they have a pretty detailed gun show down at Wilmington, Ohio, which isn't a very long drive for you. Just out Route 73 from Waynesville.
Yeah,
and it's there at the Roberts Center. And you'd be able to go there, and you can talk to a number of different people, and they can give you some suggestions, and you can get a range, and then maybe they'll direct you to some additional people, maybe even a private establishment that deals specifically with German Luger-type weapons, and then you'd be able to make an informed decision. But don't be in a rush. Please do not be in a rush, because you have a very valuable piece of history there.
Well, that's what I understand, but I also have three very young grandsons, and I just really feel more comfortable that all guns be out of the house.
Okay. Do you have internet access?
I'm sitting in front of it.
Okay. If you go to our website at sim-trainer.com and then just add /radio to that and go to the show date of the 4/3/2010, that we had a special guest on that day, Cy Bird, who is the past president of the Ohio Gun Collectors Association, and the link to their website is there in that show date, the show notes for that date. So you can find some information about the Gun Collectors Association, when their next meeting will be. And Cy has told us that if somebody, you know, calls the show and wants to come in and go to the show and they're not a member of the Gun Collectors Association, they can go to the desk and just ask for Cy to be paged, and he'll come out and talk to you. So he will help shepherd you through that process of getting a good, reasonable evaluation of how much that gun is worth.
Yeah, I happen to have heard him on part of your show, but I wasn't in a position where I could call in at that time. And he does seem like a very nice gentleman.
He is. He really is a great guy.
I will do that. I thank you very kindly.
Pat, thanks so much for calling this show. We're at the bottom of the hour, so we'll be going out to Charles Van Sant in the news. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Hi, this is Cam Edwards from NRANews.com, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.
This is Rachel Parsons, spokesperson for the National Rifle Association, and you're on Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
I'm going to follow up to a last caller. First of all, welcome our listeners back to Shooting from the Hip. But our last caller had a question or a concern about what to do with a valuable gun that she didn't want to keep around the house. And it just prompted me to bring up a couple of issues that come up regularly. And I just want to tell you, from at the police department, we've had over the years people call in and say, hey, I've got these guns. My husband's passed away, and I want to get rid of them. Well, you got to understand, once you notify the police department and all you want to do is get rid of them, as soon as they come into our possession, because of the policies and procedures of many police departments and the unwillingness of chiefs and administrators to trade those guns in for other guns that we could use, they end up going to the foundry and being shredded. And in one particular case, I'm aware of a lady who turned in probably a minimum value of $15,000 to $20,000 in historical guns, and that's exactly what happened to them. They got put in a box, taken over to a foundry in Indianapolis, and shredded. I'm aware of another case where an individual similar to the call the last time, she had a pair of match set 45 Colts, and she just didn't want them around the house because she didn't know how to secure them. Well, you know, the officer that went out there did what the protocol says, and you take them, put them in the property room. They sat in the property room for the minimum number of months, and then they were turned over to be disposed. And I want to encourage our listeners out there that if you have issues like that, either call in the show, call us down at the range, try to get a hold of myself or Mark or one of my other staff members, and let them direct you to somebody who can help you get the value that you want out of those guns, or help you maybe purchase something as simple as a gun box or a small, inexpensive safe that you could safely store them. Pat mentioned that her main concern is she had three grandchildren who were around the house. Well, the solution to that problem is to put them in a safe or in a gun box and lock them up, and then she can keep it and pass it on. I mean, that would be a tremendous item to pass on through the years from generation to generation, because there are few of those around. I mean, relatively few compared to other guns.
That is absolutely an heirloom type of piece. That would be something that could help pass that heritage from their grandfathers, the history, you know, how he got it, and the story about what happened and everything that was going on in our U.S. history, the world history during that time. My daughter is a history buff, and when she sees something like that, she just locks onto it, and it makes history real for her. And that's the kind of opportunity that Pat, you have, and others like you that have some of these heirloom weapons and opportunity to do that. The other thing that I'd like to mention specifically to Pat, but also to anybody in this situation, there's another way to deal with this situation is to learn a little bit about guns and to learn how to handle guns safely, what the proper protocols are, how do you verify that a firearm is unloaded, how do you store it safely, and those kinds of things are some of the things that we cover in our First Shots class. So for somebody that really doesn't have anything to do with guns, has never handled a firearm before, and maybe isn't even interested in learning much about firearms, but understands that it's important to know at least enough to be able to be safe if there's one around, the First Shots class is a great way to go. We have one this evening that's already packed. There'll be another one the first weekend in the next month. So, in fact, every month pretty much for the rest of the year, the first Saturday in the month we have a schedule. And sometimes we'll add additional ones. We're looking at possibly even adding some on a Thursday evening, because that gives us some opportunities to do things. And we have Thursday evenings reserved for training anyway. So that would be another way that you might be able to get a little bit more comfortable with the handling of a firearm and understand what the proper ways to do that are, and so that you can still be safe, keep that gun around, and be able to pass it on then to the next generation. We had a call a couple of weeks ago from someone who was in the Columbus area and had gone into a Napa store that had a sign on the door that said that no firearms were permitted. And the caller had talked to the manager of the store, who said, you know, I don't really like that. I'm all for people who want to carry a firearm and do it legally, but Workman's Compensation has told us we have to have that sign on the door. So we had one of our friends did some research. It's the attorney that teaches the concealed carry class at our range, that teaches the legal portion of the concealed carry class. And he gave us some information. He found one article that talked about what had happened here. And apparently back in 2004, when Ohio Concealed Carry first got started, the Bureau of Workers' Compensation lists a quarterly newsletter that they sent out, Volume 1, Issue 3. and it included an article entitled Addressing Concealed Carry Law and Workplace Safety. And the article was published as a result of inquiries. And what they basically said was that they thought that there shouldn't be any guns in stores, and that the best way to reduce the risk of injuries caused by mishandled firearms or unintentional acts of violence, the workplace should be added to the list of places where firearms cannot be carried. Now, that does not make a statement from Workmen's Compensation stating that all workplaces must be declared as gun-free zones, which is to say free fire zones for criminals. That was not what they had intended to say, although their mea culpa was a little bit soft. They didn't really completely retract it the way I think they should have, but there is no policy that we can find that says you must have signs up because you have workers and you have workers' compensation insurance, and so you are restricted from having firearms. You're having your employees carry firearms or your customers carry firearms. So that information, I just want to put that out there and let people know that even though there was back in 2004 an article that kind of implied that, but that's not really the case. That's not what the law is saying at all.
Yep. Thanks for clarifying that, Mark. I want to just follow up on something Mark mentioned earlier about our First Shots class. We have another class that has been scheduled this month with a church group, and I want to mention to our listeners out there that if you have an outing, you want to plan an outing that's very interesting, I'm telling you that a First Shots class is a tremendous outing. It's a great opportunity for those who have never had the opportunity to shoot guns to come out and get exposed to the shooting sports, to learn firearm safety. And once they come to that class, they're high energy, high charge, they're motivated. You can pretty much get a lot of volunteer work, I think, if you tell them you're going to bring them back to another class later on. And the logical follow-up to our First Shots class, for example, next week we have a basic handgun class down at the range, which is the next logical progression. Once you go to First Shots, you decide you're interested in the shooting sports, you want to find a little bit more out about other pistol caliber weapons, and you go on to the basic class, and we spend 4 hours with a group of students, letting them shoot a variety of different guns after we go over a lot of things in the classroom that are relevant: nomenclature, functional operation, loading, charging, clearing malfunctions, all the related issues. And then we go out on the range under the supervision of certified instructors, and we give you a chance to test fire a variety of guns so you find out what's good for you. So that if you have an interest of going on concealed carry, you have an interest going to competitive shooting, you have an interest of going into any one of just recreational shooting, you get an opportunity to find out which gun's right for you, and you make a purchase that's going to be long-lasting and provide you with a lot of satisfaction.
Going back to the First Shots just for a minute, we've actually run special company events as team-building exercises associated with a company meeting, associated with just an outing, a recreational outing, and they go very well. It's a great way to kind of bond together with a new experience, especially if you've got people who've never shot before. If you own a company or you're a manager in a company and you want to set something like that up, we'd be more than happy to do that. You can contact us at the range at 293-3914, or you can send an email to us at radio@sim-trainer.com, and we'll help you set that thing up. If you're interested, if you've got a question for us about anything to do with firearms, you can call the show today at 457-1290. John will be taking your call and getting you up on the board, and we'd like to talk to you. There's all kinds of issues that have been going on. We talked a little bit earlier about the bill that's currently in the Senate, which is Senate Bill 239. Senate Bill 239 did have a hearing this last week, and it was in committee, so there's still quite a bit more work to do on that. Maybe you have a question about what that bill does or what it would do. Maybe you're somebody who doesn't think that people should have firearms at all. And we certainly recognize that opinion is out there. So give us a call at 457-1290. We're real friendly guys. We're not going to harass you or make you feel little for any reason just because you disagree with us. In fact, we kind of like to have some folks that disagree with us on the show because it helps us all to work out what some of those details are, maybe get some facts out that either we weren't aware of or that you weren't aware of, and address those issues for everybody in the listening audience. So we're going to take our last break of the hour here in just a few minutes. So if you have something that you'd like to to call the show about, call us at 457-1290. We'll go back to the phones after we come back from the break. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.
God bless America. This is your blood brother, Ted Nugent, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Welcome our listeners back to this broadcast of Shooting from the Hip, brought to you by SimTrainer, the Dayton area's first indoor shooting range and firearms training center. I want to just follow up for a couple minutes about and remind our listeners that our basic class, if you missed first shots and you want to get started, that's not a bad way to start. Basic handgun is, we go over pretty much everything that we cover in first shots in our basic class. It's just that we're going to move you pretty quickly up to the standard 9mm semi-automatic pistols, and we're not going to spend much of any time with the 22 pistols like we do in the first shots class, because the wide range of people we get in first shots are everything from kids 10 years old to older people in their 60s and 70s and some in their 80s.
90s.
Yeah, and they're just interested in just coming out and having experience. And due to the low recoil and the ease of handling, we go with the 22. But our basic class is something that if you're interested, if you've got a little bit of experience, you just want to really find out what this is all about, you can just immerse yourself right into the basic class and we can get you where you need to be in 4 hours. The other thing I want to remind our listeners about is due to a problem with our HVAC system last Saturday, we've had to move our advanced handgun series back one level, or actually one day for each level. For example, handgun 2, which was scheduled for last week, will now be scheduled for next Saturday, 2 weeks later, and then every other class will also be moved back so that we will cover all five of those classes in succession over the next 6 to 8 weeks. So please take a look at our calendar on the website at sim-trainer.com and make sure if you're interested in taking those classes that you maybe didn't sign up or check earlier and want to get into one of these. And remember that you have to take handgun level 1 first and handgun 5 last, unless you get permission from myself or Mark based on your experience. We've had some people in different situations that because of their handgun experience, they were able to take a specific class. But if you're new to the game, we recommend handgun first and handgun 1 first, and then you can progress through the classes.
Yeah, about the way we do that usually is if we have someone that takes a private lesson and then is able to test out of the first handgun class. Let's go out to the phones and we'll talk to Andrew, who has a call, who's called in on a cell. Andrew, welcome to the show.
How are you today?
Hey, we're doing great. How are you?
Great.
What's your question? My
question is, one, I wanted to make sure that when traveling through Kentucky and Tennessee with an Ohio concealed carry permit, you're okay in those states, correct?
Yes, we have. They do recognize our licenses, and so you'd be able to do that. You do need to follow their rules and laws. So you need to make sure that you check out and find out what they are. We've got several links on our website that will take you to that. If you look at the show page, you know, there's several places.
The second part of my question is there any in Ohio and then also in either one of those states, are there any difference in the laws when you go to a marine situation when you're, say, boating on one of the lakes within those states as compared to when you're carrying in a vehicle on the roadway?
In Ohio, there's not. They're very similar requirements for marine and for a motor vehicle on the road. I'm not sure about the other states. Obviously, I don't know those laws as well.
Okay.
And the best thing to do is just get a hold of their Department of Natural Resources, their watercraft division, and they could probably direct you along those lines.
All right. Well, thank you.
Okay. Thanks very much for calling the show. Let's go out to Franklin and talk to Eric. Thanks for calling the show.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm very glad I caught your discussion about the workman's comp and seeming to advise business owners to put up the signs.
Yes.
And not have guns on their premises. Can you talk to what all other reasons business owners are putting their signs up? Because I run into them all the time, and it practically keeps me from carrying.
Well, the overwhelming reason is that their legal counsel, either directly, indirectly, or in many cases, I think people just think it's the right thing to do. They're advising them to do that under the assumption that if they put the sign up, they're going to minimize their liability. And again, I don't know how that would play out in the courts, but I think it's just a scare tactic. It's the legal people saying, look, if we put the sign up, then we can at least show we took some active measure to try to prevent anything from happening. What they fail to realize is the bad guys aren't ever going to pay attention to the sign. And then there's a whole myriad of other issues that can be brought into this whole discussion as a result result of that decision, and it's not very productive.
The other thing that I've heard is that there are insurance companies, not necessarily workman's comp, but the insurance company for the business, the liability company for the business, that says, you know, you have to put these signs up if we are going to have our insurance. And so sometimes the business owners have their hands tied by their insurance company. Personally, I think that means they need a new insurance company, but, you know, that's not a simple process to do either.
Really is an insurance aspect to it beyond workman's comp.
Oh, yes. But the workman's comp thing, there was the implication that actually came from the state of Ohio, where that original implication came from. And it was later retracted, but it wasn't retracted with, a very strong language that says, we were wrong and we really don't mean that you shouldn't do that. So that's part of the reason why I think there's some misunderstandings about that.
So all it does is filter out the good guys.
Exactly correct.
When they see the sign.
And what I've found is if you go to them and you talk to them, very often they'll take those signs down. Because if we go to them with a logical and clear understanding of what the laws are and what the rules are and what the implications are, and we talk to them rationally and calmly and present the facts, most often people who don't have an agenda of their own. Remember, there are some folks when the law first came out that tried to tell everyone how evil this was, and they passed out signs and they made statements that implied that the only thing they could do to protect themselves was to put these signs up. And of course, that was a lie. It was a deliberate falsehood on the part of those who were making those statements. But that's just the way it is. And so now we have a lot of recovery to do, and the best way to do that is one person at a time.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling the show. Let's go out to Ray, who has a question back on the carrying guns on watercraft. Ray, welcome to the show.
Hi. How you guys doing today?
We're doing great. It sounds like you have some information for us.
Well, my understanding of it is, and this could be incorrect, but I have spent a lot of time with this concealed carry thing since it came about. Army Corps of Engineer Waters and TVA Waters are prohibited from carrying firearms on those waters, anywhere that's a Corps of an Engineer lake or a TVA lake, for instance, Norris Lake in Tennessee or Caesars Creek right here in Ohio, I believe, is an Army Corps of Engineer lake, and I don't believe you're allowed to carry firearms on those lakes that are under those jurisdictions.
Well, what are they basing that on? Just because they were built by the Army Corps of Engineers, is there an assumption that they're a federal property? Is that what you read?
Apparently that's what it's done for. I don't know, but I had done some light research into that. I know TVA regulations prohibit it. And I'm fairly certain, if memory serves me, there is a definite indication that the Army Corps of Engineer has prohibited on their lakes too. Now, again, that I could be incorrect about that, but that's somewhat something you might want to look into as opposed to simply a state-controlled waterway.
Okay, Ray. Well, thanks very much for that. We definitely will get more information on that. Do some research, and in a future show, we'll address that question with more references about what is and what is not the case there. Thanks for calling the show. Let's go out and talk to George in Dayton quickly before the end of the show. George, welcome to the show.
Yes, sir. I'm a security guard, qualified to carry. Can I carry that when I'm out of uniform?
Do you also have a license to carry a concealed handgun, an Ohio CHL?
Well, yeah.
Okay, if you have the CHL, you can...
I had to go to school to carry this firearm on my job.
Right,
I'm asking,
right.
This is what I have.
Okay.
Can I carry that? I went to Midwestern school. Can I carry that?
Okay, in addition to that certification, do you have your concealed holder's license through the state of Ohio?
No, I do not.
Okay, that's what you need to do. You need to go get your concealed holder's license, then you can. Up until the time you get that, you cannot carry it outside the scope of your employment. Matter of fact, there's issues about whether you can carry it in your vehicle, on your person, while you're going to or from that place of employment. So I want to encourage you to go get your CHL, and that'll eliminate that problem.
Thank you very much, sir.
You're welcome, sir. Thank you for calling.
Will his training that he had for his firearms license qualify?
I don't think the private security training does.
Okay. That was the other question that I had, I think Jeff is probably right on that. So you'll need to get a class specifically targeted at the qualification for concealed handgun license, and then you'll be able to add that to your to your repertoire, and your places that you can carry will be greatly expanded, because then you'll be able to carry in your vehicle while you're going back and forth. Thanks, everyone, for being a part of the show today. We've had a good time. We hope you have. Be with us next week for Shooting From the Hip. Stay tuned now for Dr. Pat as he talks about the Just for the Health of It, and he brings you information about health. And then at 4 o'clock with Julie Beal for Miami Valley Real Estate Now. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting From the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM News Talk Radio WHIO.